and friends, our very first guest of the day as we go to Albany, New York. We want to welcome somebody who most of us in the Irish community know indeed as a friend, a great supporter of Ireland, and we, Áine Sheridan and myself, have known Tom DiNapoli, the controller of the state of New York. I don't know how far we need to go back, but since both of us were young fellows, Tom DiNapoli.
I love it. Okay. But Adrian, as you know, for today, I'm Thomas O. DiNapoli, right?
I have to point that out. I would like, first of all, to acknowledge that you have been a tremendous supporter of the Irish, of Northern Ireland, and through thick and thin, you have indeed been there, not only with you know, your investment of New York State pension funds, but you've been there at a time. When I say been there, you've actually gone to Ireland. You've gone to Ireland many times, and you commanded a lot of respect, not only in Northern Ireland, but throughout the island of Ireland, bringing good, not only goodwill, but encouragement, you know, at every level. Again, maybe this is a good day to, you know, to acknowledge your support and your interest in Ireland, and particularly in Northern Ireland.
Oh, Adrian, thank you for those very generous words. And first of all, happy St. Patrick's Day to you and Áine and your listeners. And I've valued our friendship, and I've learned a lot from you over the years about what's happening in Ireland, and certainly the struggles in the north. And I'm very grateful for those very, very generous words. And I want you to know, as an update in terms of our work there, you know, we did have an investment with a specific carve out for New York pension fund money to go to investments in the north of Ireland. We were the first pension fund to say not only do we want to invest in Ireland, but we specifically want to make sure that some of that money will go to the north, because over the years, from my visits there and certainly receiving visits here in the U.S., really starting with, as we've talked about on your show in the past, Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley together came to see me in New York. It was the start of a new day, and they said the way that we can ensure the peace process will continue and that there be transformation on the ground is that investment be directed to the north so that all will benefit from employment. Now, of course, we've had some tough times. The Great Recession came shortly after that, and it took us a while to get all of our money out the door. But that initial allocation of, I believe it was $30 million, has now been fully deployed. And, Adrian, the update I want to give you and your listeners, especially as we're celebrating Irish tradition and St. Patrick's Day, we are in the final stages of a due diligence for an additional investment in a European fund that once again will have a carve-out dedicated to the north. A lot of our investments thus far have been in the Belfast area. I've encouraged our investment partners to look for investment opportunities all across the north, including in Derry. You know, I think there are a lot of possibilities in the western area as well. So I'm hoping very soon to formally announce that in fact, that money has been allocated for the north. And especially now that, as you know, after many, many months of a deadlock, there is a government agreement again in place, you know, so that, in fact, instead of just having the civil servants carrying on the functions of government in the north, in fact, we do have a government again with the elected leadership to carry on the functions of governing in the north. So I think it's a good time for us to send that signal again that we have confidence that the peace process will hold, and that, you know, that the challenge, really in the words of that great labor and civil rights activist Inez McCormick that the only way that the peace process really will last will be if there's transformation on the ground, that whether you're in a Protestant neighborhood or Catholic neighborhood, that you can have a job, a career, provide for your family. That's what is needed to ensure that that positive feeling that came out of the Good Friday agreements, in fact, can continue to keep the peace in the North.
I would, that's not you, that's not new, I should say. You have been committed, to that, for as far back as we know. But I would like to go back to your own early childhood. You weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth, that's for sure.
No.
You were raised in a middle-class union household, and you got to know very early what the value of hard work and what it meant to actually stretch every dollar. Mm-hmm. And somehow, in 1972, won the first election and served as a trustee of the Mineola Board of Education, becoming the first 18-year-old in New York State to hold public office. I was going to ask you, when were you bitten by the political bug? Okay. What was it as an 18-year-old that chose to take the political route that you... Yeah. Have maintained through the years.
Adrian, can I blame it on the Irish? I'm going to, because my great inspiration as a young person coming of age in the 1960s was John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. I grew up, as you point out, I don't have any extraordinary story. My story is very similar to many. My grandparents were immigrants. My parents were born in this country. High school education was as far as they were able to go, but that was a big leap forward in terms of educational attainment for my family, because my grandparents didn't have very much of an education. And my dad was worked for the phone company in the old days when we had one phone company. He was a lineman, member of the Communication Workers Union, and was a shop steward. And my mom was a clerk at the civil service at the county police department in Mineola. And suffice it to say, I kind of grew up in a traditional, reasonably conservative household. But the 1960s was a time of great upheaval, as we can all remember, great division, all the different movements, civil rights, the environment, and, of course, the Vietnam War was a big, big factor. And I found the inspiration from the Kennedys, their view of public service, and the ability for government to make positive change. So I said I want to be part of that. And I was active in a lot of different local issues, including going to school board meetings. And I was, student leader and president of the school. And I didn't like some of the things going on at the school board level. And the 18-year-old vote came in 1972 for the first time. And I said, I'm going to take my civic and history lessons to heart. And we have a democratic system, and it's open to everyone. And now that 18-year-olds are enfranchised, I'd like to run for office myself. And a bunch of my friends got together. I didn't think I was going to win. We really just wanted to make some change and have people pay attention to what we were saying. And I was very fortunate that the people in Mineola, Williston Park, Albertson, Roslyn Heights, the Garden City Park, that's all part of that school district, they actually took a chance and voted on this 18-year-old, and that's really what launched my lifelong passion for public service.
If we can move to 1986, you ran for New York State Assembly and, indeed, again, elected to represent that 16th district in the northeast of Nassau County, and you would stay there for the next 20 years. Can you just kind of walk us through that period and how things had changed from say, that period you were talking about, like the 60s, the unrest, the tremendous division that there was taking place during those years. Running for New York State Assembly, that again was a big step, and sometimes we look at the Assembly and the Senate in not only in New York and say, yeah, but you know, well, they're, you know, they that's an easy job. They're, you know, they hash a lot. It kind of takes a bad rap.
Yeah.
As in fact, all political across the board, you know, political views and everything have become kind of a it's like a football match in terms of, it seems like, you know, one side against the other.
Yeah.
What was that, the Assembly, and what were the main views and issues when you that's taking us back to 86?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, very, very valid points, and certainly, you know, some of those years that I was serving, and one reason why I think Albany and the state legislature got a bad rap is a lot of folks got in trouble. You know, there were any number of legislators who got into trouble with the law, had to resign, some went to prison. Some of them were big names, leaders, some of them weren't well known, but I think that reinforced a lot of negative attitude. I mean, when I ran in 1986, you know, for my community, the big issues were education funding and protecting the environment. And when I got to Albany, I made it my priority to work on those issues and then other issues as time went on. But I kind of made the judgment that I tried to never forget what I was sent to Albany to do. And my constituents certainly kept me very busy. My part of Nassau County certainly at that time had many, many activist citizens, many organizations that played a role in the larger issues of the day. Healthcare issues became more urgent, you know, certainly during my time there. And, you know, there was a fair amount of partisanship. However, you know, many of the years that I served, the Senate, well, all the years I served, the Senate was firmly Republican. The Assembly was firmly Democrat. I'm a Democrat. And I started with Mario Cuomo, but then George Pataki was the governor for most of my tenure. So to get anything done, you really had to work across party lines, and I always strive to do that. I always would joke because I got a fair amount of legislation done because I worked with the Republican senators, especially from Long Island. I said, well, since my parents and grandparents were all Republicans, I kind of grew up in a bipartisan way anyway. And then, too, you know, we similar to all the challenges we're going through right now, you know, being in the legislature during 9/11 and the terrible dislocation in the economy, the tragedies that came out of that time. And it really was a very harsh lesson of the need to pull together, put partisanship aside. And, Adrian, I'm hoping now that we're facing this coronavirus issue, we could learn a lesson from that time and really come together. I mean, you know, I think about the 9/11 time and the dot-com bubble bursting. Of course, I was already controlling when the Great Recession hit. You know, we've been through these very challenging times before, and we've gotten through them. There's a lot about what we're going through now that might feel a little different than those two situations, but there's also the similarity that we have to put partisanship aside. So I'm hoping that, you know, that lesson that I learned from those years in the Assembly of having to work across party lines, I'm hoping that those lessons will serve me well as I try to, you know, work with the legislature and the governor as we navigate through the tough time that we're going through right now.
Again, as the controller of the state of New York, you're the guy who writes the checks. When, you know, when at the end of the day we are looking at, up until now anyway, such a divided country, a divided state in terms of the, not just the difference of opinion, but the nastiness that surfaces everywhere you go. A lot of pressure now will be on you with respect to areas of support that are brand new. There's no rule book. There's no template that you can follow. How is that? I know what a challenge it is, but
yeah.
How different is this one? You have split decisions to make.
Yeah.
And how is that going to be handled?
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, our office is the office that is supposed to be the least partisan and take the long-term view. I don't have a role in the policy decisions that the governor and the legislature make, but I do think it's an opportunity for us to step up the role that we do play in terms of providing legislators, the governor, and the general public with information as to what's happening. You know, the governor has called upon us, and we're shortly going to be releasing our estimate of what the revenue impact will be of what we're going through right now. It's unusual for us to be asked to do something like that because, you know, the state budget has to get done very soon. So normally at this time we're on the sidelines and the legislature and the governor hammer everything out. Well, we've been asked to step up. Why? Because I think our office is viewed as being a credible source of information. So, Adrian, I would say going through this tough time, we will continue to step up, maximize the amount of information we put out there so the public knows the good, the bad, and the ugly, even if the news is bad. I mean,
right.
You know, people need to keep in mind, New York State, any state, we can never go bankrupt, right? So even if we have a big loss in revenue, the challenge will be having enough cash flow to pay our bills, which, as you point out, is my responsibility. But we can never go bankrupt. And certainly any economic or revenue hit on the state has the potential to also affect New York City, local governments, school districts across New York, because so much of the state budget goes to local assistance. And that's why we're also monitoring what's going on in Washington. And we do need, it's very clear, we're going to need help from Washington, both in terms of relief for the immediate problem and support for the health crisis. But it's very clear from what we see with the stock market and other economic indicators, we are, you know, in a recessionary time. How deep that will be, how long it will last, we don't know. But Washington must come up with beyond relief, a stimulus package. We need to keep this economy going. It's different in some ways, obviously, from what we went through 10 years ago, because the problem is not the financial system or the banking system. The problem is we have a healthcare crisis, and the loss of confidence, and certainly the need for protection that is keeping people home and restaurants closed and entertainment venues closed and tourism being off and people just not spending money in the same way. All of that is having this incredible tailspin effect on the economy, and we need the federal government to help us ensure that whatever economic hit there is, that it not be long lasting, and that we get back on our economic feet as soon as possible. We've never had anything like this. We've never had St. Patrick's Day parade canceled in New York City. Right. We've never had our masses canceled. Even in my diocese now, even Easter services, right? They've already said have been canceled. We've never had anything like this. We don't have a playbook. So what we will try to do in the controls office is what we always do: be credible, give solid information, help guide to ensure that we make the best possible decisions, even if we have tough choices on how we manage our budgets and our spending in New York.
I want to thank you. Thank you for your time, Tom DiNapoli. And as it's also, as I say, not only do we value personally your friendship, but you have been, a steady, at times when controversy is rolling at its highest, we appreciate the fact that you're there, you're the steady hand. And again, in particular, I think it's appropriate, as you have every St. Patrick's Day, joined us on this one. Tom DiNapoli, Comptroller of the State of New York, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Adrian, thank you for your steady hand, and happy anniversary. Keep the show going.
Thank you. Thanks again. Okay, Tom DiNapoli. Friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.